Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Gene Hickok, Acting Deputy and Undersecretary of the U.S. Department of Education. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And joining us in our conversation also from IBM is Deborah Cameron. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Gene, let's start by talking about the department. Could you describe its mission to us?
Yeah, its mission, broadly stated, is to ensure access and quality in American public education. It's a relatively young department. It was started during the Carter administration. And its broadest purpose really is simply that, to do whatever the federal government can to improve the nature of education in this nation.
How do you describe its size, often its budget or employees, but how do you think about it?
Well, it's got approximately 4,900 employees, a budget this year of about $53 billion. Having said that, and those are big numbers where I come from, it's the smallest of the major agencies of the federal government. And its role has been kind of on the periphery of American education until relatively recently under this administration. There have been various versions of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, the Higher Education Act, et cetera. We'll get into that, obviously. But up until now, the federal government's role in K-12 education has been relatively modest, both in terms of budget and in terms of policies. But that's beginning to change pretty dramatically.
And what are the skills of the department's employees? I naturally think about education-focused skills.
A variety of skills. You've got a lot of individuals who have doctoral degrees and do research and education issues, reading issues, skills issues, curriculum issues. You've got a lot of individuals who are talented in law and public policy. Obviously, a lot of individuals whose emphasis is economics and budget. It is a pretty typical bureaucracy in the sense of how Washington bureaucracies function within their sphere of responsibility. And you have a number of folks who have been engaged as public school teachers and administrators over the years who are now trying to contribute through the federal government.
Now, your title is Acting Deputy Secretary and Undersecretary. Could you tell us about those offices?
Well, the Deputy Secretary is on the organization chart the number two person. And traditionally, the deputy secretary has been engaged in the day-to-day management of the operation, sort of a COO, if you would. Responsibility over finance and budget, management, things like that. The undersecretary traditionally has done similar sorts of things as the number three person, working on budget issues. That all changed with this administration. When Secretary Page came in as Secretary of Education, he wanted the undersecretary, which I was originally appointed to serve and still serve, to be overseeing the implementation and reauthorization of our major education policies. So with No Child Left Behind, which is the signature piece for this president, the office of the undersecretary is in charge of implementing that law and helped to steer the passage of that law through Congress. And the deputy was doing primarily management things. Now that I'm doing a little bit of both, or basically doing both, my job is to sort of help Secretary Page make sure, one, the place operates successfully, the management end, and two, the public policy end gets implemented successfully as well.
So you have a broad set of responsibilities. How do you divide your time?
I don't sleep much. it's fascinating, really. I divide my time. First of all, I have a lot of very capable people who work with me. And I depend upon them a great deal. I really do firmly believe that one of the first principles of good management is to make sure that you have talented men and women working with you, that you give them the opportunity to use that talent, and you give them the flexibility to demonstrate what needs to be done. I have to do that, and good management always does that. And then I try to decide, based upon my schedule and the issues before us, which one demand the kind of attention that office deserves. And frankly, it's a great job. I mean, intellectually, it's very rich. There's a lot going on. The stakes are high. The consequences are important. And you're talking about what I consider to be one of the most important things we can do in a democracy, and that's make sure every child gets a good education.
Well, you're very fortunate to have a job like that.
Yeah.
Tell us how you got it. What did you do before you got here?
Well, I was Secretary of Education in Pennsylvania for 6 years under Governor Ridge. In Pennsylvania, unlike some states, that is an appointed position confirmed by the state legislature. And unlike most states, the Secretary of Education oversees all of education in Pennsylvania from K through graduate school. So my portfolio was pretty rich in Pennsylvania, and I did that for 6 years. I was the longest serving Secretary of Education in the history of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. More importantly than that, before that I was a college professor of political science in a small college in Pennsylvania called Dickinson College. Also taught law school at the Dickinson School of Law, which is Penn State's School of Law, although I'm not a lawyer. My PhD is in poli-sci. More importantly, I was on the school board, so I had a sense of the dynamics at the very local level of the little p politics of education with two kids in public schools. So I've been very lucky. My experience for both the Pennsylvania job and this job, my background is relatively unique. I am not, quote, a public school educator. But I think that's been to my advantage because having not been a product of that environment, I came in with a separate set of questions. And that led to some rethinking on my part and on the part of the administration that I was overseeing, and I think I've been very lucky.
How did the state experience help you think about this job? I'm sort of contrasting the delivery of the services of the state and now the Ed Department helping educate.
Well, you know, at the state level, there is kind of a daily bottom line. The fact is the states are the ones who control public education, and then the way it's actually implemented, obviously, is in public schools all across the country. At the state level, every day you recognize there's a direct link between what you do and what goes on at the school. It differs by state. Pennsylvania, for example, doesn't control curriculum. Some states control curriculum. But in terms of testing and standards and assessments and public policy and budget, obviously, and school code, that was all being influenced daily through the department, General Assembly, the State Board of Education. And there's kind of a sense of concrete, tangible reaction every day. The farther you get away from the school district, the farther you get away from the state, the direct relationship between what you do and what takes place gets real, real slim. And indeed, it's one of the great challenges you have at the federal level. How do you make sure the people who make important decisions in Washington recognize how those decisions are played out in the real world of a classroom or a state board of education? So for me, I was lucky. I had experience at that level. I didn't have much experience with the Federal Department of Education as a state chief. It wasn't on my mind a lot. When I came down here, I remembered that. And my job was to make sure, and remains to make sure, that the Federal Department of Education has a greater sensitivity to and appreciation for the political little p topography of state and local education. We cannot do a good job if we do not understand the way that world operates and appreciate it and respect it and defer to it as much as we can. And that also means they'll respect us because it's not the federal government telling them what to do as much as the federal government trying to help good things get done.
What are the differences or even the similarities between the types of management skills that you use at the different levels?
That's interesting. You know, I'll be honest with you. I think I've learned a lot in both of these positions. And I was not a manager. Like I said, I was an academic, which is about as far as management as you can get, frankly, except for maybe classroom management. I think a couple of things remain constant. It is the importance of respect for individuals. I don't care where they are or what they do. Unless they give you reason other than that, you should respect them as individuals and be respectful of their contributions. The importance of listening. I think particularly in political organizations, quite often people come to these jobs with a variety of backgrounds and a variety of expectations, and they sometimes confuse high office with deep insight. They really think that they deserve to be where they are. Well, you know, in most cases, we get these jobs for a variety of reasons, and our highest obligation ought to be to make sure, one, we remain humble, and two, that we listen carefully to our constituents. And for me, that's the American people. It's the educators. It's the taxpayers. It's everybody. So listening is very important. Being decisive. There's a tendency in many of these jobs, I think, because the stakes are so high, the bureaucracy is so deep, the paperwork so overwhelming, the pros and cons go on forever, to want to put off making tough decisions because you can put off making tough decisions. That's human nature. You've got to be decisive. Doesn't mean you should be simplistic, But our job in the end is to make decisions, to weigh consequences, and to move forward. And I think the other thing is to recognize that in these organizations, everything is political. And that's not a bad thing. I was with a bunch of managers just the other day, and I mentioned the fact that in public organizations such as the Department of Education, good management is not always good politics, in the sense that you might do a performance analysis of a policy or a program and recognize it's not a good thing to keep doing. It's not a good use of federal dollars. But if it's got a lot of support on the Hill and a long track record, it's not going to go away. So good management might say, don't do it, but politics says you're going to do it. So good management is not always good politics, but bad management is always bad politics. And so you live in a world now where, especially with this president, where the quality of the way we do our work needs to be the very best it can be, and it needs to emulate business principles as much as possible in an environment that by definition is constantly going to try to push back on business principles.
An interesting point about management and policy. It's been 2 years since the No Child Left Behind legislation was passed. What have been the results as well as the management challenges? We'll ask Gene Hickok of the Department of Education when the Business of Government Hour returns.